You know, tomorrow is Independence Day, 1776, the signing of the Declaration of Independence, 56 signatures on it, John Hancock, the biggest signature, but there is one person who is conspicuously absent from the Declaration of Independence. His signature is actually not on the Declaration. Anybody have any idea who it might be? Yes? Who? George Washington, did I hear it? Yes, it's George Washington. George Washington did not sign the Declaration of Independence. He was actually a delegate to the First Continental Congress, but he was not a delegate to the Second Continental Congress because he arrived in his military uniform because he was drafted by the Second Continental Congress to lead the United States Revolutionary the Continental Army against the British government and their army. And so they drafted him early in 1775 to go and kind of put together an army. Now, you have to understand that back then, I mean, there was a few militias in some of the cities and states, but as far as putting together a national army to actually do this thing called separate from Great Britain, it was a monumental task, an absolutely monumental task. By that time, Washington was noted for being a general, but it's still at this point early on in the game, they had absolutely no idea what was going to happen. Because the British Army, well, they were well-funded. They had lots of money. They had a well-trained military, one of the best in the world. They had very, very well-educated generals, and they had the most powerful navy in the world. And then you got the American Continental Army, and they had poor funding. They had absolutely no central government whatsoever. As a matter of fact, they were still working on that over there. They had a military that was completely untrained. Few of their generals were very educated, and they had a small Navy fleet and absolutely no comparison at all to the British Navy fleet. And here they were going up against Great Britain. And yet George Washington said, "Let me lead this army because I can lead us to victory." Because George Washington was a great general and a great leader. And he knew that the Americans had some advantages over the British. For example, they were fighting on their own soil. And they had a good number of soldiers. They weren't well trained, but they had a good number of soldiers that would come forward to say they would fight. But more important than that, it was the American frontier. And all the men really, really knew how to shoot their weapons. And George Washington knew that that was an advantage. And so he pulled together this army, and he started training them and started working to become a great, great army and a great force. See, George Washington was a great, great leader. He knew what it took to be a great leader. He knew what to focus on. He knew what the mission was, and he knew how to accomplish that mission. A lot like Nehemiah. Now, he wasn't a general. He was on a different mission. It was a mission to come back. You remember last week we talked about Nehemiah and how he was now coming with the king's permission back from Persia into Jerusalem to rebuild the gates of the city. And it wasn't that the stones were fallen down, that it was decrepit. What it was that with the stones fallen down and with no wall to the city of Jerusalem, all of that great power and the esteem that Jerusalem had was gone. And he knew that if he wanted to restore Jerusalem to its great glory, he needed to bring those walls back up. And so he goes to Jerusalem just to accomplish that. And now we're in Nehemiah 2, the second half of Nehemiah 2, and we're going to take a look at what it is about Nehemiah that made him a great leader. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about George Washington and what made him a great leader. And then we'll apply it to our own lives about what we can do to be great leaders in the Christian church, because all of us are leaders in the Christian church. So we're going to go back to Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 11, and we're going to start right at verse 11 where Nehemiah says, "I went to Jerusalem, and after staying there 3 days, I set out during the night with a few others." And the first lesson of leadership that we get from Nehemiah, actually you just pass by it, you don't even realize it, but it's this. He stayed 3 days in Jerusalem before he started. Now, you'll remember last week or 2 weeks ago, we talked about how when he heard that the walls were tumbling down and that they were decrepit and they needed to be rebuilt, he just cried and cried and cried for days. He went to the king at great risk, and he got permission from the king and all the papers and money to come back and rebuild the walls in Jerusalem. And he was so excited about it. He was so passionate about it. He travels 800 miles as the crow flies, although probably a lot longer because we don't know what path he took, but it could be as much as 1,000 or 11 or 1,200 miles. I mean, it'd be like from here to Cheyenne, Wyoming. And he's got all this passion, and he comes with all these people, and he comes to rebuild the walls, and you'd think he'd get started immediately, right away, but he doesn't. He spends 3 days in Jerusalem, and that 3 days was to rest. And we know that from Ezra, the previous book before Nehemiah, that 3 days was a time of rest. And he comes into Jerusalem, and instead of starting immediately in the task, he's tired from his journey, and so he rests. One of the things that we need to learn from Nehemiah about leadership is sometimes leaders need rest. Sometimes so many people, and me included, go so many miles a minute, we burn the candle at both ends, we think we can do everything, that we never stop to rest. And yet God commands us to rest. And as a matter of fact, when he created the earth in 6 days, what did he do on the seventh day? He rested. Jesus rested all throughout his ministry. There's all sorts of examples of great leaders who take the time to recharge the batteries. And if you're going to start out in a project, it behooves you to spend a little time resting. And so many times, especially in American culture today, we just go around like crazy. We never spend the time to rest. We're burning the candle at both ends. We're doing everything we can to get everything accomplished. And yet, rest is so critical. I'm reminded of the story of the guy who was cutting down a tree because he had to cut down this tree, and he's chopping. If he had just stopped and rested and relaxed and contemplated what he was doing, he would have realized that his axe was really kind of dull. And so he could have sharpened the axe, and he'd have done the work in half as much time. Sometimes resting is what God calls us to do. There's a 2004 study done by Dr. Timothy Rares, who is the director of research at the Sleep Disorders and Research Center at the Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit. And he found that decision-making was dramatically decreased with lack of sleep. If you're going to be a leader, get some rest. It's what Nehemiah did. But then he goes on. I love this part of Nehemiah. It's probably my favorite part of Nehemiah. In chapter 2, verse 13, he goes out and he surveys what needs to be done. And he goes out by night. He goes out to the valley gate, and he goes towards the jackal well, and then the dung gate, and he examines the walls of Jerusalem, and then he goes to the fountain gate. These are all different gates that entered into Jerusalem. And he looks at the king's pool. Now, the king's pool, you may have heard about, if any of you have been to Jerusalem, it's a pool that's outside the city of Jerusalem, but you can actually, there's a tunnel. It's called Hezekiah's Tunnel that goes into that pool, and it was built during Hezekiah's time, and they started at both ends, and they met, and the purpose of that tunnel is so that they could get water if they were under siege. And so it's a very, very important tunnel and pool, and he went there, and then he went and examined the wall, and he came back through the valley gate. And the officials did not know where he had gone or what he was doing because of yet he had said nothing to the Jews or the priests or the nobles or officials or any others who would be doing the work. He kind of just did it by himself. He went and he surveyed what needed to be done. And this is why I like Nehemiah. If you look at Nehemiah, you realize he's an engineer. He goes to look at what needs to be done before he goes and starts doing the work. That's, you know, he's an engineer, he's an architect, he's a planner of some sort, and he goes and he surveys what needs to be done. But what does he do? He develops this plan in secret. He doesn't go broadcasting to everybody, this is what I'm going to be doing. Why is that? Because part of the plan of leadership, part of the one of the qualities of leadership that Nehemiah had was that he knew that there would be opposition to building the wall. And so he knew that he needed to kind of get a plan together so that they could build the wall, but he didn't want to tell all the people that were going to be in opposition to this plan because he was doing something, you know, these walls have been, they've been lying here in ruins for 200 years and nobody's rebuilt them now, and now you're going to rebuild them. I don't think so. There's no reason to rebuild these walls. And all the naysayers and all the people who were against the plan, they would come out in full force. It is okay at times to do things and keep your own counsel when you're making plans, especially if you know that the enemy is out there and that there's going to be opposition. You need to have a well-thought-out, executed plan before you go. And that's what Nehemiah did. He developed the plan in secret. It reminds me of the First Continental Congress. You know, they met from September 5th to October 26th. This was the discussions, the First Continental Congress, the discussions to figure out, you know, what should we do now with all these taxes that they're levying on us and all these things? Maybe, just maybe, we should secede from Great Britain and become our own nation. Did they broadcast it to Britain? No, they held the meeting. The First Continental Congress was held completely in private for good reason. Because if you were found there, you were going to be found as a traitor and probably executed. So there are times in this life, even in a Christian's life, when it's good to keep your own counsel, especially if you know the enemy is out there. And it's a very difficult, fine line because it sometimes seems like you're being dishonest or something like that. But you know what? Jesus said in our gospel lesson today, he said you need to be what? He said you need to be as shrewd as a snake and as innocent as doves. There are times in this life when you need to know who the enemy is and you need to prepare for that enemy. And Nehemiah did that. Because wherever there is the people of God, there is the enemy prowling around like a roaring lion ready to destroy you. And you need to be aware of that. And Nehemiah was aware of that. But he came up with a plan, a great plan, a brilliant plan. And then the next step was what? To motivate the people. Verse 17, then I went to the people and I said to them, do you see the trouble we are in? Jerusalem lies in ruins and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and we will no longer be in disgrace. And I also told them about the gracious hand of my God on me and what the king had said to me. You see, part of what Nehemiah did to motivate the people to say, we can do this, it was a monumental task. Think about building a wall completely around a city that had been desolated. It was a monumental task, but you know what? Nehemiah said, we can do this. And you know why we can do this? Because look, it's what happened in the past. I'm over in Persia, and I get this burning in my heart to come do this in Jerusalem, and I went to the king, and the king had every right to kill me, but what does he do? He gives me safe passage and he gives me money to come and to rebuild the walls in Jerusalem. The king's hand is on me. God's hand is on me. Look at what has been done so far and let's carry it forward to the next step and let's rebuild this wall. And the great leader does that. A great leader looks to the past and says, look at what God has done. Look how God has prepared my life and given me the skills and the tools necessary to do this next task. And you know what? I can't do this task by myself, but with God on my side and the way he has guided this, we can get this task done. And that was so powerful that the people said, what? Let us start rebuilding. So they began this good work. You know, George Washington knew early on that he had to have a couple victories because the army, they were just a ragtag army. They were afraid because they were fighting the British who were supposed, you know, the redcoats. They would, when they'd shoot the British redcoats, they couldn't see the blood. And so it looked like they just kept coming and coming and coming. And they were invincible. And it put fear in the people. And Washington knew this. He knew it was going to be more of a psychological war than anything. And he knew he had to have some psychological victories. And one of his first victories was at Trenton, New Jersey. You know, the British, they're smart. They got all the money in the world, right? So they hired Germans to come and fight the war for them. And they were camped out in New Jersey. And they were a very powerful force. And Washington says, we've got to get these and nip them in the bud. And so what he does is he crosses the Potomac River at night on Christmas Day. And he goes in and he captures, and they only lost four people. They captured this whole entire garrison of German mercenaries. And it was such a moral boost. And then right after that, he went into Princeton and did pretty much the same thing. And those moral boosts, it's like, look what we can do. See, Washington knew that sometimes that you needed to look at the past. If you're going to be a leader in God's church, look at the past. Look at what God has done for you. And draw upon that when you go to people to lead them and say, look at what God has done. So many times we're going to do things and we're going to motivate people, but we never look internally to what God has done for us. But Nehemiah did that. And then the last thing was this, of course, of course, of course, of course, of course. Verse 19. So he gets a plan in place and he tells the people, and we're going to do it. And then you got these three guys. Oh, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard about it, they mocked and ridiculed him, saying, aren't you going against the king? You can't do this. You can't rebuild the walls. They've been down forever. It's not going to work. How many times in our lives have we come up well-laid plans, we've motivated people, we're going forward, and then there's always the naysayers. Oh, it can't be done. We've never done it that way before. I'm sorry. You're going against God when you do that. No, no, no. I mean, you got to prepare for the opposition. And you know it's going to come. There's always going to be people. One of the hardest parts of leadership is dealing with the opposition. Because you get all these people excited and motivated, and we're going in one direction, and you've always got the stragglers like, well, we can't do that. We can't do that. Know that there's going to be opposition and deal with it the way that he did. Because Nehemiah said, the God of heaven will give us success. We are his servants, and we will start rebuilding. We don't care about you. You see, if God has laid it on your heart to do something, you've got the people motivated, you're going in God's direction, you are in line with his will, the naysayers, let God deal with the naysayers. And as a matter of fact, if you hold on to Nehemiah's principle, not only will he deal with the naysayers, but he kind of puts you out of the loop. Because if it's a success, Nehemiah says, the success is God's success. And if it's a failure, I did my best. You see, a great leader understands when to just say, we're going. And if it fails, it's God's glory. And if it doesn't fail, you know, I'm still a leader. I did the best that I can. Nehemiah knows that all good things came from God. And all the strength comes from God. And when you put it on God, then you as a leader don't need to worry about it anymore. It's in his hands. Just let him do it. And he will come through for you if it's the thing that he wants to do. That's what George Washington did all the time. He always relied on God. You know, what is it that you know about George Washington? You know all the stories and everything, but there's one story that I guarantee you that all of you know about George Washington. And what is it? Chopping down the cherry tree. That's exactly right. George Washington chopped down the cherry tree. We don't know if it's true or not because there was no video cameras back there. But then his father's like, who chopped down the cherry tree? And he goes, I cannot tell a lie. It was me. George Washington, throughout his whole career, was known as what? A man of integrity. That if he did something and said something, he would follow through with it. He was known for his integrity. And if you look at some of the great leaders we've had, what have they been known for? Their integrity. And how I wish. I'm not saying that we don't have honest politicians today, but I can't think of many of them that are known for their integrity. And yet, that's so much a part of being a leader, is to be a man of integrity, to follow right and wrong, to do the right thing. But George Washington was a man who completely relied on God. I looked at all of his writings. And the one thing that he always did was he never felt he was up to the task. And he always felt that he was doing things wrong, and he was always asking for God for forgiveness. And in one of his prayers, he said, direct my thoughts, words, and work. Wash away my sins in the immaculate blood of the Lamb, and purge my heart by the Holy Spirit from the dross of my natural corruption, that I may, with more freedom of mind and liberty of will, serve thee, the everlasting God, in righteousness and holiness this day and all the days of my life. A great leader is one who knows who your God is and what he has done for you and what he's going to do for you. And our great God has come to us and redeemed us and made each of us leaders in his church. And we can cling to him and we can do great things. Just like Nehemiah. In Jesus' name, amen.